Edmondson, who served with the South Saskatchewan Regiment in the Battle of Normandy. The date is the 19th of August, 1979, and he's being interviewed by Dr. R.H. Roy in Victoria, British Columbia. I'm interviewing him specifically on the battle for Verrières Ridge with the Saskatchewans going into action on the 20th of July, 1944.
You want to come over and we'll fight? Better bring your brigade, your diary with you. Now, we'll start here, shall we say, on the 19th. When you're over in this area, you're up. Where is it?
There's Carpentier Airfield.
Yeah, just off Carpentier Airfield. And I gather that, according to the various diaries, that the more or less the outline plan of what was going to happen had been known to all three units several days ahead of time, in other words, before Operation Goodwood or Operation Atlantic started.
Correct.
And started on the 18th, and they pushed down, and then on the 19th, the 3rd Div gathers the, Vaucelles, pushes out here to Cormel's. The 5th Brigade is whipped over here, and they push down and get roughly Fleury-sur-Orne and Ifs, and they have Colombel. Now, during those 2 days of Operation Goodwood, when you people are over here on the other side of the Orne, the 3rd Division is coming down here, the British 8th Armed Corps are batting down over here. And from all the accounts in the war diary, and I mean corps, division, brigade, and indeed right down to the unit, by the evening of the 19th, by the time the 5th Brigade had captured this general area around here, there is a very definite feeling of optimism that the battle you're going into is not necessarily going to be a pushover, but they talk about, this is just a screen. In fact, both Simmons and Foulkes had apparently thought even of rushing over even one battalion with a bunch of tanks, thinking that he could crack down through there. So in any event, word comes on the 19th, there's an O group actually at 2 o'clock in the morning of July the 20th. Now, you wouldn't be at that, of course. And the plot and plan for the whole business is finally straightened out. An extra battalion is given to the brigade, the 6th. In other words, you get the Essex Scottish. And whereas the original plan called for a 2-up and 1-back battalion attack, because of the wideness of this front, you get the Essex Scottish, and the entire brigade is going to go in. The Camerons over here, the Saskatchewan's over here, Fusiliers, Montreal there, and with the Essex behind, coming up the general line of the road of the South Saskatchewan coming up behind them. Now, the move, and I won't be telling you much of what you remember quite well, the move over here is made at night, and there's a lot of complaints from most of the battalions. For example, the Fusiliers, Montreal, complained about not having had time for breakfast, and the Camerons, they had breakfast, but they didn't have time for lunch, that sort of thing. Now, do you remember with the Saskatchewans about eating, for example?
I don't recall any administrative problem on eating in that particular stage.
Okay.
We anticipated originally that we were going to attack before lunch hour.
Yeah, that's right.
So there was no problem. I mean, I'm sure we had our breakfast.
Yeah.
But I mean, that part is sort of hazy, but I don't recall ever being hungry at that stage.
Right. Okay. Now, the forming up point, roughly, is right along here, right in front of Ifs. There's Ifs right here. Brigade headquarters.
Negative.
That's there.
Negative. It was to the west, and there was a track, and we were north of the track.
You're right. I think it's burned. Yeah, you're right up here. You're right up there. This was the Fusiliers Montreal over here.
Could well be.
Yeah. Now, the South Saskatchewan, I think pardon the Camerons, they're forming up places right along this track, just behind the crest, right along here. So you people presumably would be.
I thought they were farther down in the valley than that.
No,
it's hard to tell.
Yeah, not there, and they're.
Oh, yeah, because this is east. I'm out of whack here.
Yeah. Now you people assembled, I would assume, somewhere back here. In other words, your forming up place was somewhere back here. In other words, back in the.
It really became an assembly area.
Yeah.
When the attack was postponed, it really became an assembly area. And I noticed they said we dug in there. Well, I don't ever recall anybody digging in.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody may have made a shell scrape, but I don't recall any orders to dig.
Yeah.
I think when those Nebelwerfers, after we sat there so long and the Nebelwerfers started, that perhaps some people dug in, but I don't recall anything other than perhaps 3 or 4 inches down.
Yeah.
So digging in is a nebulous term.
Yeah. Well, General Ross, or Colonel Ross as he was then, he mentioned that it was just a shallow scrape thing, so they were getting flat down. Do you remember several wardires mentioned this, some shelling and watering while you were still in your forming up place?
Oh, for a good 2 hours.
That much?
Oh, yeah, at least. Started in the morning, went on right straight through until we went across the start line. It was sporadic.
Yeah.
But that was our first encounter with the Nebelwerfer.
Yeah.
And there was more of that than there was of shelling. There was some shelling. The company I was with, B Company.
B, was it?
B, yeah.
Yeah.
Bravo. But let's just put it this way. There was nothing to cause us any great discomfort.
Yeah. Just not to...
Just a nuisance value.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And most of it, as I recall, was slightly off to our flank, to my right, where I was. And certainly all the Nebelwerfers came down in a pattern to my right. I don't imagine anyone came closer than, well, maybe 1,500 yards.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's get us up to the start line, the H-hour itself is put down, or is put back, I should say, from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock.
That's right.
And they say in the war diary that the day started out very cloudy, that it wasn't giving... the clouds were so low that the Air Force, you couldn't get the Air Force support that was anticipated, and therefore they put it back until you did get a bit of sunshine for a short time, at least during roughly the middle of the day. And then away everybody goes at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, you people, from your start line, and here I call upon your memory, you are going up a slope.
Correct. We had been the other sort of assembly, and FUP had been on the reverse slope.
Yeah.
From the enemy point of view.
Yeah. And you have a creeping barrage going in front of you.
Roger.
And you come up over the slope, and here, if I think I'm right with the Saskatchewan, these are your various areas that you were allotted, right along here, C, A, B, and D, which would put you, let's see now what the devil are, where the devil's barriers go, oh yeah, and here is Cotville and Beauvoir,
yeah.
The farm. You're coming up at this time. Now, once you get over the crest and start up this, what looks from the map to be quite an open slope. Is that right, as you remember?
Nothing but wheat fields, grain fields.
Yeah.
That's all. No cover.
No orchards, no. Sweet damn all.
Nothing but grain fields.
Now again, from memory, do you remember where your supporting tanks were at this time? Were they in front, behind, or?
There weren't any. That's the big problem. As my memory goes, the tanks were to move on our left, coming along with the FMRs, and the tanks never showed. I never saw a tank all the time I was there.
Is that right?
Yep. Never saw a tank, and never saw a POO. And we crossed the start line with no forward observation officers, and no knowledge of the tanks. And no POOs arrived to cross with us. Never saw a POO throughout the whole operation.
God. Where, to your memory, did you start getting really blasted after you started up the slope? I mean, presumably everything's going fairly well, you know, the normal thing is, and then you start getting small arms fire.
Actually, it wasn't all that bad. I mean, the two forward companies, Glenn Dickens, I guess, which was D Company on the right, and I think C Company on the left, have they got it?
Is it in...
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, you would know better than I, right?
In any event, I was the follow-up company. We were attacking in T formation, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
In other words, two companies, B Company as a follow-up, and a company in reserve.
Yeah.
That is the way we started.
Right.
With the two forward companies, the right forward company complained, Glenn Dickens complained of heavy casualties.
At about what point do you
remember? Oh, I would say that would be, is there a, I'm just trying to, no, I'm not looking at that map, I'm trying to go from my memory. There, where the track goes, it's more like a crossroad as you go up there, and there's actually, there's some deep cuttings along that road, which you don't get from thinking of a track on the map.
You want to look at it through the,
let's have a look at that. Let me get back on the start.
Yes, it's started.
Where you're coming up, well, 50, 60, and then you're over the top. And this is the, what is this supposed to be where we're supposed to follow this? That's a railway, isn't it? There's no railway there.
That's a road, I think.
That's a road.
Yeah.
All right, so we came up and down along the road. I would say the first that I was aware of all the problems would be in this. I had, my company was well down the slope, let's put it this way, well into this area.
Yeah.
Before I was informed of any difficulties with D Company on the right.
Mm-hmm.
And at about that stage, I was ordered to push through him. See, at that time, it was hard to tell who was firing where with the barrage that was moving.
Yeah.
Because we could see the barrage moving in front of us.
Yeah.
But I was a follow-up company, which put me about, a good 200 yards behind the barrage.
Yeah.
And then I had to move as fast as we could through Len Dickens' company and catch up to the barrage.
Ah, yeah. Now, in fact, he pulled out from the barrage because of casualty.
Well, he stopped. Stayed, complained and went to ground. As I recall it. When I say go to ground, there was some light fighting because the Germans were in the trenches in that area. And there was a little bit of routing them out, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I didn't see any major defensive position when we walked over it. As far as I'm concerned, and the complaint of heavy casualties was not borne out because you never relieve somebody until he's had 50% casualties, and I was pushed in there well before he had 50% casualties.
Who told you to go forward? Is Manning
Hopson? Yeah, Rich Happy.
Where was he? He would be immediately behind the two forward companies?
That's the battalion headquarters.
Yeah. Did you have any vehicles with you? Do you remember any of your carriers?
I had a carrier behind, but not with us. My company was completely on its feet with no vehicles.
Yeah.
The company carrier was well back in the FUP to come forward later. Actually, all this operation, from the time we went in to the time we were taken out, my company vehicles were not with me.
Yeah. Now, do you remember being, well, no, you don't, you don't remember any tanks shooting you onto the objective or anything like that. The tanks may be coming up the crest behind you as you went. No, you wouldn't be going down. It was the cameras were going down. You were going up.
Actually, when you look at this thing, it's what they call Kidney Ridge.
Yeah.
And we sort of crossed the hump of it.
Yeah.
And when you think of D Company's objective, actually you're getting onto a forward slope looking down to Verrières. You can look back, half left to Verrières.
Yeah.
By that time, we were out of the wheat fields into a pea field. There was absolutely no cover. And the only tanks that I were shooting certainly weren't shooting us anybody onto the objective because we were on it. And the only tanks shooting I saw were the Germans who came up closer to east than I was, in other words, in rear of us on our flank.
On your left or right?
On our left flank, looking towards the south.
Well, now, this bit about, what was it, A Company stopping, is that mentioned here in the War Diary or not? I don't
know. No, it just says that I had to go through D Company.
Incidentally, how did you find the A Company in the War Diary?
Not too accurate.
Let's see, moved across the start line at 3 o'clock, moved up to a formation.
That's not right. It was T formation.
Well, yeah.
Two companies forward.
Yeah. A Company on the left, D on the right, that's you.
No, D Company was Major Dickens.
I beg your pardon. Yeah, B. And
D Company was follow up.
And then they give you your objectives, which I've got on the map there. Yeah. 10 moved forward in very good order and did the first 1,000 yards in a very fast time.
No, that would be about right.
No opposition was encountered until they reached the wireless stations, which are...
I'm not familiar with that term, wireless station.
I don't know.
No knowledge of any wireless station. I don't recall seeing anything.
Maybe in some sort of house. Then they proceeded to the crossroads, where heavy opposition was met by two forward companies. The enemy were overcome. Now, you don't remember this...
This is the part, I think, about this stage where, on the conclusion of this stage, when I was ordered to push the Zandik.
I see. Then they proceeded to the road and track junction, etc., where, at this time, D Company hit heavy opposition on the right and lost approximately one platoon and two officers.
Well, now I could be wrong in which location they say the second, but I only recall sort of one incident where things sort of bogged down. And now this is when Reg came and told me to start to move forward. Now, I would imagine that Len Dickens' company, by this time, had probably, and now I can't guarantee this, had probably overcome, as they said, the opposition here, and had then proceeded on, because I know I had to catch up to them, and we have to move quite rapidly through these fields trying to catch them.
Yeah, B Company was ordered to push through D and seize D Company objective. B came forward and helped him up D Company's position and then proceeded towards D Company's objective. D Company first encountered the enemy at 041597.
Where's that?
Yeah, 041597. 041. What the hell are the numbers? They hide them. 1, 2, 3, 4. 041597. Page 59.
We're heading for that track.
Yeah.
We're heading for that, just off that, not that junction. That junction there is where we were to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The enemy then started to lay down heavy mortar and artillery fire actively on our positions. Well,
no, they're a little out on that. The heavy mortar and fire and what have you on my position. Actually, we had more mortar and artillery fire as we went through D Company, then we had right on D Company's objective. It was the tanks who came in and overran our position. I don't think that's mentioned in the war diary.
Well, not yet, anyway.
No.
So that up to this point, up to very close to your position, things seemed to be going fairly well.
Things went quite well until I was sitting on in the P field.
In a B field, isn't it?
No, P field. You know,
36. Yeah. Sort of what? How high? About a foot and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we came out of the grain field into the speed field.
Yeah.
And this was the objective. It was hard to try to pick up tracks. We went more by contours and what we could see because there were no tracks visible in this particular field, even though the track was shown on the map.
As you came up, just before we, before we get to the place where the tanks attacked, as you came up, could you see anything of what was going on down in St. Andre? Could you more or less look down the slope of the hill?
Couldn't see a thing down that side and couldn't see a thing on the other side of the crest. They were not indivisible. We could not see the cannons.
Could you see anything on your...
And I could not see...
The fusiliers, Mario, could they be much further behind?
Yeah, they were not to come as far forward as we were.
Yeah.
And the company on my left, I couldn't see it because there was a slight crest there.
Okay, your war diary says, the enemy then started to lay down mortar fire, etc., etc., etc. B Company pushed through the artillery and mortar fire.
That's correct.
And took their first prisoner of war.
That's correct. Through there.
Five POWs were taken. You don't remember what they were?
All I know is that I can remember seeing streams of them, going down the line.
Yeah.
Up that they're all directed towards the road, told to get down that.
Well, the such opposition as you did get on the way out towards your objective, and I right in assuming these to be German infantry. Aside from the shelling and mortars, there needs to be German infantry in their foxholes or slip trenches.
Well dug in.
Well dug in, with a damn good field of fire, I would think.
Yes, excellent. Excellent field of fire. Actually, this is where old Bob Foley, as I recall, he was killed. One of my officers saved my life, because as we went through D Company's position, there was Germans still hiding in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
And this character came up after we walked over the positions.
Yeah.
And he was just off... Well, maybe 30, 40 feet to my left rear, right rear, and I have to turn around to signal to Bob, and this fellow was aiming at me out of the slip trench, and Bob Bullies caught him and blasted him.
I'll be damned.
So that's why these things stand in your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And Trelevin, who was one of my platoon officers, this was the first encounter we had. We were trying to keep up with this branch that was still going.
Yeah.
And we were caught between our branch and then the German DSS, which is coming down in time.
Yeah.
And the question is, do you walk through it and try to keep up to yours, or do you hesitate and let it come and then go like mad through the area where the DSS was?
Yeah.
Well, to save lives, we hesitated, let the crops come down. When that stopped, we went like a dose of salts, straight through, to say about 100 yards,
yeah,
to pick up our own branch. That's
yeah,
why that stands so well in my mind. It's one of the lessons you learn more.
Yeah. Yeah, as they lift from
yeah,
one line to another. Let's see. B Company continued forward and encountered their second group of enemy at 044 and 596. There they took approximately 10 POW. And then they moved forward as far as 044 595.
Yeah, that produces a lot there.
444, yeah, 5959. Yeah, this is 60 years.
That produces about on that, where the WD is.
Yeah.
That would be right.
Yeah. While the battalion was mopping up the enemy on the high ground in the area of 035590, four tanks were spotted at approximately 047594, coming in on the contact. One was identified as a Mark IV, others unidentified were not Mark IV. So tanks attacked D Company with HE and MG fire. Now, let's stop there for a moment. You get up, and you actually reach your objective.
Yep.
And, yeah, here are the tanks coming in, evidently up the path from Rocancourt.
I would have said, I didn't see tanks coming this way. They came at us this way.
Now, just a minute. Well, again, no, let's take a look at that now, aren't we? Yeah, 047, which I thought was the word there, in all probability, may not have been there.
That's right.
Yeah, 047. 1, 2, 3, 4. 047, 594, which is
okay, yeah.
So they come in
within 200 yards of
them. Yeah, from the southeast.
I would have said actually they came the first tank I saw, well there were tanks, let's put it this way, in rear of me. Rear of my company.
Where you were beginning to dig in.
That's where we were going to dig in. We hadn't even started.
Oh, I see. You're still in the open.
We didn't even have a spade in the ground yet. And this first, there were tanks behind us, and one tank came right in amongst us. Came right in amongst my leading platoons, and in fact, people that it didn't shot, or shoot, that's not shot, shoot.
Yeah.
It just drove right over top of them. And I saw it, I was hollering at one of my platoon sergeants, 30 feet away, when they put an HE right in his back, and he just disintegrated.
Good God.
And then they turned on me, and this is how well I recall it, and I can recall that damn big muggle coming and the tracer starting, and I took one running die for that out of that pea field for the wheat field, and those things just hop, skipped right across my backside as I did a running roll right into the wheat field.
You were that close to the wheat field?
Oh, yeah. See, you have to understand there's two platoons,
yeah,
company headquarters,
yeah,
the third platoon.
Yeah.
This is the way that we were on the ground.
You know,
and I had been forward with the two platoons.
Yeah.
And I said, stop here. And then I got a hold of the rear platoon. But as soon as I saw the tanks coming, then I said, holy smoke. We're caught flat-footed in the open.
Yeah.
There's no hope if you've got tanks coming at you in the open.
Right.
Well, let's say before you could even order the company into the cover of the wheat field, the tanks were right in amongst the two forward platoons.
Yeah.
The anti-tank weapons were knocked out. Oh, within a matter of seconds.
How close were they to you? Do you remember?
The two, the anti-tank?
Yeah.
Our own?
Yeah.
PS?
Yeah. Oh, I see. The anti-tank.
There was no 6-pounder or larger or any anti-tank weapon other than platoon weapons anywhere near us.
You were supposed to have a troop.
Well, that came up late and it didn't even come anywhere near us. I saw it come in and get knocked off on its way up. This happened later on in the battle.
Mm-hmm. So there you are with the three or four tanks. Your pierce are knocked out, you say?
Yep. Machine gunners knocked out. Casualties were wounded. Had a lot of walking wounded who were streaming back.
Yeah.
So I ordered what was left to get under the cover of the wheat field and dig in.
Yeah.
Well, hell, there was nothing. You can't, you lost. I would say that there's, if I want to put myself in the worst light, I had relatively little control because there was nothing to control.
Yeah.
I could only control those who were immediately near me. So we were in the wheat field. I had part of company headquarters, some of the remnants of a rifle platoon, Johnny Gates, my 2IC, and we were screaming like mad, trying to get artillery support, trying for everything. Not a thing.
Well, no.
Couldn't contact battalion headquarters. Haven't had been in contact with the battalion headquarters for over an hour.
You knew that you were out of contact?
Yeah. This is when they talk about when they finally got a hold of one of those carriers coming up along with anti-tank one head. They're trying to get some artillery fire brought down to give us some cover so we could reorganize and dig in there, well in front of the Essex fire.
Well, now, this is your first blast, or this is the first time the tanks blasted, and we're talking primarily about your own company. Are there any other companies that you could see at this particular time when you're being pushed back into the wheat field?
Not a one.
Not that you could see?
No, couldn't find. As a matter of fact, we were in that wheat field for quite some time, and I said to Johnny Gates, you just take over with what's left around us, and I'm going to crawl through this field and see if I can find battalion headquarters.
Yeah.
So I crawled through the wheat field and over the other side, and I couldn't see a soul anywhere. Just couldn't see a soul anywhere. All I could see were walking wounded well behind us.
Going back. Yeah.
And even in rear of us were the Essex Scotties who were also starting to, who at this time were bugging out. And we were well up in front of them. I had the impression that the tanks, as I mentioned, were in rear of me on my left flank,
yeah,
as I faced the enemy. That the tanks overran, which company would it be there? C Company? Charlie Hill? No, A Company. A Company.
Hmm.
Overran that into the C Company, which I think was Charlie Doyle, and we're hammering, if I could put it this way, they were hammering us this way.
From the east?
Yeah. And slightly to the rear. Let's say if I moved back from there,
yeah,
200 or 300 yards, let's say back into where B Company was, there wasn't a soul. Couldn't find a soul anywhere.
How long did this last?
It's almost impossible at this stage to say how long it'll last, because time becomes meaningless, and that's sort of a chamazo.
Yeah.
There's no other word I can use to say it was a complete chaos.
Do you know later what happened to the CO? Was he killed this time?
He was, yes. He was killed. Along with Doug Pedlow, the IO. I think they had a carrier with them, but I know they were all knocked out.
Yeah. In one blast?
In one blast. The whole battalion headquarters just disintegrated.
Let me read a little bit more here. The tanks attacked B Company, HEMG fire, and the Piets were ordered to the ground, and the B Company started to withdraw to B Company area, where the anti-tanks were being set up. Now, this is the battalion anti-tank guns.
And this, I take it, what they're, I think they're referring to this troop.
Yeah.
Of 17 pounders?
Yeah.
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 Well, as they came up, they were just knocked off on the way up.
Yeah.
The Germans just knocked them off. They were ablaze before they were even, they were still mobile in their vehicles.
They're being pulled up by vehicle. Well, actually, they wouldn't be that
active. They just were brewed up.
Yeah. When B Company reached the right flank of D Company, with only half the company left, they found the anti-tank guns either shot up or being shot up, so they started to dig in. At about this time, Major Matthews and Lieutenant Pedlow, who were up at the companies, received an almost direct hit and were believed to be dead. The tanks came right up to the crest of the hill, so certainly they would, you've gone over the crest, and were taken, and started to lay down heavy, high explosive and machine gun fire, causing heavy casualties. Now this
is where they even get into where the Essex were. We were in front. See, the fire didn't hit me at that particular stage that much, because it was all to my left and to the rear of me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
They'd be whacking you and they'd be whacking the FMR at the same time, I would think.
If they were, I don't know.
Yeah.
As I say, I couldn't see the FMR.
At the same time, the German infantry came in on the right flank from the high ground and started to lay down machine gun and mortar fire on the troops. Now, do you remember anything of the German infantry?
Saw no German infantry. I have no recollection of any German infantry coming in on the right flank.
Okay.
Well, from the high ground. I don't ever recall seen any enemy on that higher piece of ground that was just off to my right. As a matter of fact,
if we could
just digress a moment,
yeah.
The whole plan, as far as we were concerned, was suspect. I'm saying tactically suspect at this particular stage, because why would you want to dig in on a track junction on a sort of a forward slope within a few hundred yards of a high feature overlooking you?
Yeah. Well, I think the idea was for the Essex Scots to go through you. and push on down.
It would have been far smarter for us to have gone right straight for the high ground.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that's one decision I had to make, whether to hit, when I got onto that position, which I considered untenable, on a forward slope, I figured I had to make a decision whether I should sit there or go for the high ground.
In other words, keep on going.
That's right.
Up here.
Yeah, of course, the tanks took that decision away in a hell of a hurry.
Could you see upper where you were once you got into the pea field? Could you look, presumably you could, down at Fontenay-le-Marmion?
Yes, yep, you could see it.
You could see it.
Yep.
And Roquencourt on your left?
Because we later captured that.
Okay. By this time the anti-tank guns were out of action, and firing on A Company front was very heavy. Major Edmondson, commanding B Company, contacted the artillery carrier. Now,
there was a vacant carrier sitting in the wheat field, and I got on the wiring set, trying to round up somebody to get some artillery fire down in front of our position.
Safe? Nobody in it?
No.
Nobody around?
No, not sure.
Nobody dead in it? Or?
No. Wireless, apparently, operative. No operators. Nobody.
You got that. Was it the wireless carrier? Presumably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a gunner carrier. Bombing the artillery. I thought it was perhaps one of the poos who was supposed to come, but who arrived late and never got there.
And again, at this point, you can't remember seeing any of our own tanks anywhere nearby?
Never saw a tank that belonging to our forces, that is, the Allied forces, from the time we went across the start line until the operation was over.
So you worked the dials, or what have you?
That's right. Got on it as it was, and tried to raise, and asked for help and artillery fire, and I gave a map for artillery fire. I got no response out of anybody. I didn't have their call times.
Yeah. And mentioned about passing a message to brigade headquarters asking for support against the tanks, but was unable to contact anybody. The remainder of B Company then withdrew through the grain field through C Company area. Now, as you withdrew through the grain field, did you bump into anybody else?
Hardly anybody. Hardly anybody.
Major Edmondson then reported the position of the line of the forward troops to brigade command post at Ish. In other words, he withdrew back over the cliffs, back through the wheat fields, over the crest of the hill. And how did you get to the brigade command post?
Walked.
Just walked. Leaving the company in command of your two eyes.
There was practically nothing left by that time.
Yeah. Yes, it's Scottish. Who were in reserve, then came forward.
That's incorrect.
Yes.
The Essex Scottish were already on the ground prior to my moving back to brigade headquarters, and had already started to bug out before we even got back as far as they were.
You could see them?
Oh, yeah. Well in rear of me. I could see them get up and turn and run.
Okay. As you were coming back,
I came back into nothing.
Yeah, but were you?
First of all, I didn't even know the Essex Scottish were in our brigade, and I had no knowledge that they were supposed to be behind us to hold a position in our rear. So it was a complete surprise to me to see this battalion on the ground and then get up and head south, head north again, just take off into the blue.
Well, let me read you something here from the brigade war diary. Yeah, I'll just read it off to you.
Sure.
1,500 hours. 1,500 hours, all three battalions with two companies up were at the start line. On the opening of the barrage, the men got up from the fields of growing grain and commenced moving forward. It was a spectacular sight seeing this advance over a front of some 4,000 yards. Behind the FUS, FUS small s.
Two layers?
Could be. Yes, that could be. Could be seen the F echelon vehicles just over the heads of the crops of wheat and oats. Intermediate report line force was reported by the three units according to plan. The capture of PW was reported both by the Fusiliers and the Saskatchewan. By 5 o'clock, reports were received that the South Saskatchewan had two companies on their objective. And I wonder who reported that in. By 5:40, a similar report was received by the cavalrys. Situation at the front of these two battalions was very satisfactory. Consequently, about 5:30, The Essex Scots were ordered to move to their position with all possible speed. Now, they're coming up behind you. It was known that the Fusiliers were encountering considerable opposition at Clotville and Bovar Farm. With the armor support, the CO, presumably of the Fusiliers, appeared confident that he could proceed on to his objective. In other words, he had to get through the farm and come up further. By 18:20 hours, now this is 6:20, and by that time you've been reported on your objective, the Essex were reported on their objective and digging in had commenced. Again, somebody incidentally wrote a question mark on that, and the Essex Scottish War Diary says very little about this, except one or two days later when they really blast off. Okay, by 5:50, the first general indication of enemy tanks in the area became known. Now, of course, when you were smacked by the tanks, you're too damn busy to, A, contact anybody immediately, and you can't contact anybody anyway.
No contact with battalion headquarters, yeah. That's the only wireless communication I have.
Okay. It was thought that at that time, the tanks which we had in support should be capable of destroying the odd enemy tank which might be in the area. However, the second call from the South Saskatchewan Regiment, additional pressure was made to the headquarters 27th Armored Regiment, and that was confirmed that there were some 46 tanks in the South Saskatchewan area, and that possibly two of these were of the Tiger tank, Tiger type. The reserve squadron was ordered forward to engage in order to get quickest assistance. The additional troop from A Squadron, which had been with the Camerons, were ordered across. 6 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, communication with the South Saskatchewan Regiment was lost. It apparently had been bad in the companies after the heavy downpour of rain, which took place about 5 o'clock. An effort was made to contact the Saskatchewans through the armored channels, but without avail. Avail, probably because they didn't know, they weren't up there and didn't know where you were. Okay, it appeared that our tanks could not move into the area in which the South Saskatchewan Regiment was due to the excellent firing positions of the Tigers and Panthers, were presumably coming up over an open field for them to reach you. They would be being picked off by German armor, so just didn't come up. I'll check that with their what the chief they say. Information did come back, however, through armor channels that the South Saskatchewan area was receiving heavy mortar and artillery fire. The latter included this type, that type, and the other. It also reported, and this is by about 7 o'clock, that the fire must be by observation as the degree of accuracy was very high. By 1900 hours, the situation was extremely confused, and although an LO was dispatched forward to ascertain the position, he was unable to make progress due to heavy mortar and artillery fire. I wonder if that carrier you got... No, you say it was definitely an artillery.
It was an artillery.
Yeah, okay. About 8 o'clock, a report came through Armour Regiment channels that the South Saskatchewan continued to have heavy shelling in the area of their objective. About 7 o'clock, Major Edmondson had reported to the brigade command post that the acting CO had been killed. Now, when did you know...
Oh, so I think somebody on the way back said they were knocked out. Somebody told me that. I contacted Len Dickon, who was the company commander I pushed through.
Yeah.
We were the only two majors who were left.
Yeah.
And I inquired. I said I hadn't been able to find him. They said, well, he was knocked out.
Do you know if he was in contact with anybody by wireless, or do you remember?
Can't recall.
Yeah. Acting CO had been killed. Communication completely cut and requested instruction. He was ordered to keep the unit together and hold the position on the reverse slope, and orders would be issued to the armor to cover him with protective fire while this was being done. Heavy range commands, etc., etc., etc. At about 2100, an LO reported that the South Saskatchewan was withdrawing to their forming up place. Now, this would be sort of a general withdrawal.
Yeah, people could make their way through the wheat, one by one through the wheat fields.
Yeah.
They were told to get back.
When you were withdrawing, by the way, were you being laced by the tanks at this time?
No.
No. What?
That sort of ceased, to my recollection, sort of after this would be, that's hard to remember, in actual hours. Actually, after the Essex were gone, that phase of the sort of tank fire seemed to let up.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that there on, it was mainly artillery and mortar fire.
Yeah. Withdrawn to their forming up place. Brigade commander issued instructions. This withdrawal must be stopped and the unit make reorganization immediately behind the Essex Scottish, which was to hold fast in its allotted area. About half an hour later, this would be about 9:30 or thereabout, getting dark. But half an hour later, however, Brigadier Young became aware that the last two companies of the Essex Scottish, became aware that at least two companies of the Essex Scottish had also withdrawn. Evidently, he didn't know this. This personnel was rounded up in the FUP about 11 p.m., and the brigadier visited them about midnight, talked to them, and then arranged with division for rifles, Brens, Pierce, etc., which arrived at 4 o'clock in the morning. The men were dispatched back to the lines. Colonel MacDonald, the OC, came to the command post several times during the evening. Brigade commander's orders were made very clear to him, but he seemed to have lost complete control and was himself in a very excited and nervous condition. He assured Brigadier Young, however, that he would gather himself together and would have the unit in its place before dawn. And then it goes on about the fusiliers' morale. I was talking about the CO of the FMR, as although somewhat excited, was most rational and in good control. His sound grip of the situation formed a marked contrast to that of the OC Essex Scottish. The fusilier Montreal continued to hold this reverse slope feature, although Beauvoir Farm was not finally clear to the enemy. Then it goes on to the Camerons, who they say had good liaison between the infantry and the tanks, although down to Colonel or General Ross, he didn't find too damn any tanks. There were some around them, but not that much. The general situation, therefore, at the end of the day showed the Camerons at hand on their objective, etc., etc. Essex, in the process of being reformed to their original objective, Fusilier Montreal, 600 yards short of theirs, but well established and disposed, so as to be able to repel two small counterattacks which were launched against them during the evening. South Saskatchewan, badly scattered, many of the troops still in the grain fields of their objective, and others gathering together in their original forming up place near Ifs. And then he says, the chief difficulty experienced by all four battalions was the devastating water and artillery fire which descended upon them immediately they had reached their objective. This is a general comment by Brigadier Young. Although I am convinced in most cases every attempt to get slip trenches dug, the shelling and mortaring was so intense and so accurate that it delayed and demoralized the troops. There was direct observation from point 112 west of the Orne and from the high ground east of the Orne. It was very obvious that the fire was brought down by observation, and in that it was confirmed, confined to the actual area occupied by the troops. When this fire ceased, enemy tanks immediately appeared, and by direct firing were able to prevent troops from carrying out their work and getting their trenches dug. I feel that enemy tanks alone would not have frustrated the tank reorganization. There were several instances of men using pierce. At least one tank was destroyed by each of the fusiliers Montreal, Camerons, Saskatchewan by their pierce. Other hits were made by but actual destruction could not be confirmed. The Germans had a definite advantage in knowing the ground, which was very rolling and had many defilating approaches. This made it possible for the tanks to disappear from a site and after a short time to reappear from a completely different direction, etc., etc., etc. From all possible sources I have learned that the leading units had brought their anti-tank guns onto their objective within 15 minutes from the time the leading infantry arrived. The difficulty was that of getting them dug in and having suitable arcs of fire. A great number of guns were knocked out by the enemy tanks just as they came into position. The folds of ground and tall growing grain, although a disadvantage insofar as field of fire was concerned, did however prove considerable assistance to men escaping in the early evening and during the night. Many men of both the Fusiliers and the Saskatchewans, when surrounded by the tanks and infantry, lay in fields until an opportunity came to escape. Two NCOs who were near a tank when surrendered lay 10 feet from the tank for 6 hours before being able to get away. And so on and so on. And I must say,
that's a reasonable account. And so far as what I saw.
Yeah.
What Young said. He just, I know when I went back to report to him, he just couldn't believe it. He said, "Oh, stop getting so excited." I said, "I'm just giving you the facts." I said, "I haven't seen a tank, a forward observation officer, and I've been out of communication for hours, and I can't find the general headquarters." I said, "And the Essex College just, when we were pulling back to dig in, they just disintegrated the evidence." Of course, I was harshly accused by old General Folks for not staying and digging in the pea field.
Yeah.
And to which I simply replied, I said, "When all your automatic weapons and all your anti-tank weapons are out and you've got no communication, you've got no tank support, no gunner support, no anti-tank support of any kind coming behind you, you have one duty and the tanks are running over top of you, then you've got one duty, and that's to save as many lives as possible, and that's why I ordered them back into the wheat field."
Yeah.
I don't think he ever forgave me for that.
Were they actually literally? Well, I suppose they would be just roaring ahead. I wonder if they were doing this on purpose or just.
Well, they were. You see, once the people got out of the pea field in my company, then there were no easy targets.
Yeah.
So the only thing they could do then was turn around in the wheat field and just chatter away like mad with the machine gun.
Just spraying.
That's right. Yeah. So we must have laid in that field, I don't know how long, but that there was only one tank. Only one came right in on us, that close.
Yeah.
Right in amongst us. As I say, I was within 30 feet of the tank. And we must have been in that field for ages. At least it seems, time when that is going
right.
You don't really know.
Yeah.
And your mind certainly doesn't tell you anything about time.
Yeah.
It might have been 5 seconds, it might have been 50 minutes. My memory can't tell you that.
Yeah.
I do recall it was late in the evening, though, when we were still trying to get people together out of the wheat field. And, and issue orders, as soon as we found somebody, we were told them back to the FUP.
Yeah.
Get over to the road and get undercover and get back to the FUP. And we had set up a drill there to have them held and reform in the company. Well, hell, there wasn't much to reform. Next morning, there was myself and out of B Company, myself and nine. Following the time.
Judging him, and I must add, in your word, I did say, do they give the
numbers? That's the only that I can
see. Yeah, I'll find them out, but...
I think that, as near as I can see, the war diary for the South Saskatchewan was written, I would take it, as the thing was pieced together afterward.
Yeah.
Sort of caught up.
Yeah.
Because it's, I would say, a fair summary, not completely accurate, but a fair summary.
Yeah.
The thing that is...
here we are. In the attack, the regiment lost 13 officers and 209 ranks killed, wounded, or missing. And they say that the company commanders for the attack were A Company Major Wells, who was missing. Now, did Wells ever...
He was killed.
He was killed. B Company Edmondson, you're okay. C Company Captain Doyle, missing.
Yep.
He was killed at that time also.
Actually, later on, we retook that when that area was captured during Totalized.
Yeah.
Because there had been such a shamavo, and we were accused of losing all our automatic weapons and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over and looked at that battlefield. And my platoon officers are exactly where I told them they would be, and all the weapons are there. And I invited General Folks to go over and have a look, and he refused to go. I said, "You asked me all these embarrassing questions a couple of weeks back." I said, "Now, if you want to come and see the evidence, it's still there. The bodies are still laying out. They're not even buried." I mean, Bob Pulley, who was one of my platoon officers, I knew exactly where he was.